If you're looking at your 27th or maybe 50th zucchini that you've harvested this summer, asking yourself, what else can I make with this? You can only have roasted zucchini so many times. This episode is made for you, plant friends, with one of my favorite people on the internet, one of my favorite plant friends who's now casually a New York Times best-selling author, Caleb Wise of Wise Guide. You probably follow him on Instagram or socials. Caleb is the definition of a modern homesteader. He's a gardener. He's a cook. He's a storyteller. He shares simple, joyful living from his gorgeous home in Iowa. And now he has this New York Times best-selling cookbook called Always Room at the Table. And when I was reading it, I knew that I needed to do an episode with him on zucchini because it is the plight of the gardener at the end of our gardening seasons. We have too many zucchinis. But in addition to amazing zucchini recipes for you to try out with your garden harvests, this conversation with Caleb, it's really just full of warmth and wisdom and inspiration for anyone looking to deepen their connection with their garden and their kitchen and ultimately their stomachs. So you might need a snack while you listen to this episode because we talk about food a lot and it's going to make you a little hungry. Welcome. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
Hi, plant friends. My name is Maria. I'm here to help you care for plants and grow joy. And today we have a very joyful, very skilled chef of a interviewee, Caleb. But before we dive into today's episode, I just wanted to give a quick thank you to two new Patreon subscribers that have come in. Thank you, Woody. Welcome. And thank you, Carly. And if you don't know, I have a Patreon account. It helps support the podcast and the editors and my podcast manager. And you get all sorts of extra goodies. So if you're interested in checking it out, you can go to patreon.com/growingjoy. This conversation is so wonderful. I don't want to waste any more of your time. So let's dive right in. Here's Caleb.
Joy.
Caleb, my plant friend, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here to talk about it.
I sat with your book this morning and I was reading through it and I just had like the biggest smile on my face. It is so beautifully shot. One of the opening photos is just like you grinning, you know, ear to ear with all of your beautiful food. And I've followed you for a while. I've known you, you know, for a while now. And I feel like as I was moving through the book, you see your family, you see you in the book. So congratulations. Well done.
Thank you. That's what I really wanted. So many followers, or whether they're not followers too, because hopefully the book hits both places. I wanted them to feel like you were visiting my little spot in Iowa for just a little bit to experience the things that obviously shaped what the food is. And so it kind of gives more of a backstory when you're able to hopefully like see and get a sense of place from where I'm at with it all.
So beautiful. You, for those listening who might not know Caleb behind Wise Guide, you're a gardener, you're a chef, you're so many things. How did you become this like amazing plants man that you are today?
I wouldn't call myself any of that. I'm a home cook, definitely, not a chef by any means. I grew up just with, obviously, in a farming family, but we always had a big yard and mom was always in the garden preserving and canning a lot of our food. And at that time, it was mostly just because we didn't have the means maybe to buy all of our food. So she was able to do what she could to help the farm, which was grow and save our food so she could feed the family. And so for me, all those things just became so natural as I was growing up. To be in the garden with her, to plant food, to plant seeds, to preserve that food. It just became kind of like a reflex. And so when I had the ability to buy my grandparents' house, which is across the road from where I grew up later on after college, it was just immediate that I was going to garden without even thinking. I put in like a massive garden and had tons of produce right away as one person at that time, and instantly just did the same thing. I started preserving it. I started putting it away. So without even having really like a conscious thought about, I always think it's funny now because homesteading is such a thing and the word is such a buzzword. Yeah. And to me, it wasn't ever necessarily about being a homesteader or finding that space. It was just what I knew. And it became such a comfort spot for me, especially at that time, having a job that wasn't necessarily feeding me or making me feel inspired, being able to like and do the things I knew to do and move my hands and my body outside in the garden just, I think, became my like respite and something that still to this day I feel like is just it. Whether I feel tired or whether I feel exhausted, I'm still going to go plant a garden. I'm still going to pick the stuff and come in and cook something every night, even if I'm tired. So it just feels like it's like such a part of me that I can't really see me and not doing it. I don't know if that's probably a really bad answer to the question.
No, that's a beautiful answer. How would you describe your garden style? Like, what type of gardener are you?
Ooh, that's a tricky one. I feel like it's evolved a little bit. I do feel like it's an evolution. I feel like I grew up with a very, we'll kind of verge this on like landscape / plants and vegetables. But I grew up in a very, to me, like Midwest cottage style garden where it was kind of just plant whatever you love, however you like it in a flower bed. Just so it's kind of though a beautiful cottage mix. And our garden growing up vegetable wise was a big in-ground garden. And it was where my great grandma had had it. My grandma had had it there.
Whoa.
My mom had it there. And it was this
same soil.
Right. Which actually is an interesting thing. And we did finally move it about 10 years ago because of that. But it was beautiful. So we live in Iowa. And I will say, you can dig 6 foot down where I live and never hit a rock or clay. It is rich, black soil. So it was
a
big... What?
What's your zone? 5B. Okay.
When I would have been young, we called ourselves 4. And since probably then now we're around a 5B, just on the edge of a 6. I would say in the next 10 years, we'll probably be closer to a 6. But that big garden had, we would put rows in. We rotated the crops every year. And mom, of course, we had it tilled spring and fall, if I remember right. And then once we would have the rows of vegetables about May or mid-May, we'd put down corrugated cardboard from one of the livestock buildings and we would put compost. And so all of our rows had a thick layer of compost that would eventually just work down to the soil. So without realizing it, I think my mom and dad were building soil and thinking about that. And I think that's what taught me, but they wouldn't have necessarily, I don't think, verbally understood how good that was. They just also were always doing what they were taught. So I think the reason that in-ground garden worked in one spot for so long is because they were building that soil continually. Otherwise, I think you would have depleted it pretty quickly, obviously, but they were really making sure we had a big compost pile that all of our green scraps went on and anything from outdoor, and then continually every year using that on the garden. So now my garden has transformed. I would say when I moved into here, I'm a much more formal person. I love formality. And it started slightly more of like an English formality, but I think with watering and kind of just climate, watching how things can do better with maybe different types of patterns. And so I don't have to spend as much time or waste as much water. I've definitely switched a little bit more to, I like to garden with chaos within defined lines. So I like now, I'm really kind of leaning into natives and drought tolerant perennials, but I like to define them within kind of clear paths and kind of contain them in areas that still make my formal side feel much more complete. So my vegetable garden is fully like raised beds now, which we've switched my mom's to raised beds too, just because there's so many benefits. So I like things to be clean lines and have a little bit of kind of laissez-faire within those.
Yeah. I love the aesthetic of the raised beds that have that clean angular lines and then the like wild tomatoes pouring out of them. Like
that's
the vibe. Yeah. And like the chamomile, like pouring over the side, you know, like
Absolutely. It's
all so beautiful. And you do kind of all of it. You do edibles, you do ornamentals, you do landscape, you do cut flowers too, right?
I do some. So the cut flowers are the one that I don't go full into like dahlias or anything too intensive just because, so I live on a little over 2 acres. And then I also am always kind of bouncing back and forth between my mom's across the road, which is probably, I don't know, 3-4 acres. And if I do too many cut flowers, it just stretches my time a little, because they can be a little bit more time consuming. So between multiple vegetable gardens, lots of landscaped area, cut flowers are the one where I'll do like simple things like peonies and some certain perennials that are easy, but I don't go into like lots of them seed starting with cut flowers and things like that, just because after
so you're doing the perennial.
Yeah. I'm just not. Yeah. So I do a lot of perennials.
I think that's important because I think some people will look at your amazing Instagram and, you know, it'll feel overwhelming, right? Because you do have a lot going on. You have a lot of different areas of your home. You have a lot of different things. So it's helpful to know that even you give yourself boundaries of, I'm focusing on edibles. I'm focusing on perennials if I'm going to do flowers. And I think that's important because some people want to dive headfirst into homesteading or into gardening or into this or into that. And then when you bite off too much, then more than you can chew, then you can't enjoy yourself anymore.
The number one advice I give to anyone is start with something you love and stay with that for a little bit. So like, even if like someone has never grown a garden, I say like, pick a couple things you love to like buy at a farmer's market, whether it's a tomato, a cucumber, zucchini, whatever. Start by growing a few things instead of everything. Because if you stress yourself out, exhaust yourself out in 1 year, it's not going to be fun to keep doing it. And you're probably going to want to give up because gardening is a lot. Like I always say,
it's a lot.
Growing up, it was definitely kind of more for like sustainability. Now it's turned slightly for most of us into a privilege. Like gardening is something we do, whether it's like for curb appeal or for vegetable growing. It's on top of usually another life, our work life. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of other stressors. So it's all time. I tell people, my yard is all consuming. Like if I have a spare moment while I enjoy it, I'm always out there. Like if I'm not writing posts or recipes or developing or testing, I am outside. And if I'm not, I'm thinking about outside and what I have to do because I am just one person. A lot of people think, you must have a lot of people. No, I just don't like sleep a lot and don't really go out or have a social life. I am out in the yard at all times. And that's what I want. Like it's totally a choice. And I know in most cases it would be way too much. It's way too much what I do, but I do it because I can't not do it. I want to.
And you found your zone of tolerance. So like for you, it's a yard and two vegetable gardens and, you know, all these gorgeous containers you do. For someone else, it's three houseplants, right?
Right.
For someone else, it's 3 acres. Like for everybody, the zone of tolerance and the zone of joy, the zone of enjoyment is interesting. I found, because I moved from zone B to zone 10B this year.
Huge change.
I'm just so disoriented. I am so in over my head.
Yeah.
It's like I moved to a different country.
Yeah.
I don't recognize one plant on my street in the landscaping. Like none of it. It's so bizarre. So I'm like, I'm just doing herbs and tomatoes because I need to relearn how to do herbs and tomatoes this year.
You almost have two gardening seasons, right? Like you can probably do tomatoes two different times a year, I'm guessing.
We're doing this interview in February. I'm doing tomatoes right now. I have red tomatoes on the vine.
Bizarre. I'm going to start my first batch of like brassicas this week probably, which means I'll plant outside in like 6 weeks.
So I guess in Florida, I missed it because we were just moving and I missed it. But like you're supposed to start planting in October. I like totally missed it. So now I'm trying to plant some zinnias because I just want a little bit of flower moment. Sure. I might miss it. Like they might melt because apparently in Florida, there's like a melting period of where all your plants are going to die. So it's fascinating. But also I'm like, I really want to go tropical fruits now down here. I want to do mangoes. I want to do bananas. I want to do it all. We have a coconut tree in our backyard, but I'm like, I don't know. I think I need a season of just some herbs and then I will move on. But anyway, enough about me and my Floridian challenges.
No, I love that though, because that's what gardening is amazing. You get so used to kind of your area. And then like that's a huge change. I mean, it's a completely different ideology about gardening.
And it's so fun because I'm a beginner again. I haven't been a beginner in 8 years. And like, it's also making me talk to my neighbors. It's making me, you know, go to the library, talk to make plant friends at the local garden centers. I've learned like in Florida, you can't shop at the big boxes because they're going to sell you everything that they're selling the rest of the country. And you're going to kill things. So I've made friends with the ladies at the local garden. Like it's been really interesting and fun. But we're here to talk about you. So you are this incredible gardener. So it sounds like this has really been in your blood. You know, when I talk to people for the show, I often hear two different stories. Either I grew up around it, and then I moved away to college and I forgot about it, and then I remembered it 10 years later. Or I grew up killing plants, not knowing. And then I learned and taught myself. You are, this has been in my blood my whole life. Yeah. This is natural. I am naturally intuitive. I am, this is part of who I am. I love that you started an edible garden right after college. So whether you're knee deep in tomatoes right now, whether you're trying to revive your flower beds after a heat wave, maybe you have a pest attack, who knows what's going on in the month of August in our gardens. Whatever you're doing, you're probably going to need some help from Espoma Organic because they will help feed and refresh anything you are growing in your garden. At this point, it's the end of the gardening season for most of you, which means your plants are hungry. They've likely sucked all the nutrients out of the soil that they've been planting in. So August is a perfect time to give your garden a boost with a gentle organic fertilizer like Espoma Organic's Tomato Tone, which is their tomato fertilizer, their Garden Tone, which is their general garden fertilizer. They have a Flower Tone, which is perfect for all of your flowers. Pretty much whatever you're growing in your garden, they have a tone, a specific plant organic fertilizer that is catered specifically for what you're growing. And they've been doing this for a long time. Espoma Organic knows what they're doing. They're a fourth generation family run business. They've been in business for over 90 years. And Caleb is actually part of the Espoma family with me. He's one of the content creators for Espoma, just like me. And I know Caleb uses a lot of their products in his garden too. So whether you're starting your fall crops, you're reviving and refreshing your current crops, Espoma Organic has you covered. To learn more about their pet-friendly indoor and outdoor products, you can go to espoma.com, and that's where you can also find where your local Espoma dealer is. Or you can click the link in the show notes to go to my Espoma Amazon storefront and see all of my favorite picks. Thanks, Espoma. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
Yeah, I know. This makes me sound better. I don't think I'm like as good as that sounds. I think it's just, you know, when you live where I live in Iowa, we are not isolated, but you know, the closest grocery store would have always been 15, 20 minutes away from home. So to us, you were mostly at home. And if you went somewhere, it was a little bit more of like a thing. We didn't just go out all the time. So our time was spent, if it was nice outdoors. And so for me, maybe it was just that I gravitated towards it, but I loved everything about growing, whether it was flowers or whether it was vegetables. I just really attached on to that. And I was also always one that wanted to be a part of the preserving process. Like still some of my best memories are sitting at the kitchen table with my grandma Conrad, which was my mom's mom, who would come out almost every day in the summer, and she would help whatever we needed like to process from the garden. And we would sit there and I would usually just ask questions because I think I found it so fascinating and still do the progression of gardening, especially in farming, just because that's where we lived. But, you know, my grandma at that time grew up about 10 miles from where we lived. And when she was growing up, she would have stories that her mom at one time, there was a day that they picked as a family, 200 pint of strawberries. Now they only had a big family, but this is when most of them were out of the house. And I said, you mean that great grandma had that big a strawberry patch? And she's like, oh yeah. And she would make her cheese and she would cure meats just because they had to. And so the idea right. of this progression and heritage of gardening and how it changes, I think was just so fascinating to me. And it kind of still is to think that, like, when you think about the process of it, you can take a little seed. Like, I think about this every year, and it sounds so stupid. You can take a little, like, eggplant seed or tomato seed. You can plant it in your house. Wait, you know, 6 weeks, whatever, until you plant it outside. And then in, like, a couple months, you're going to have all of these vegetables from, like, one little seed. Like, it's just kind of mind-blowing. And then you get into it, and then you kind of get more and more.
And then you save those seeds.
I know. And then you can save the seed. I mean, it's just like, it becomes this, like, thing where it's almost, and then you start learning things and adapting, or you have a really good year or a really bad year, and sometimes you just can't help that no matter what you do. But it's just this thing that I think gets into you, and it really truly is beyond therapeutic. Like, the moment I can get my hands dirty outside, it's like you can kind of just, and maybe it's being in social media like I am, but, like, I'm off my phone. I'm like dirty and I can't just get on my phone, which is good because my hands are dirty. And I'm just like in it and I can be lost for hours. And I love that.
I spend like probably 75 minutes, like just with my houseplants this morning, just like with the hose, hosing them off, couldn't have my phone. I am buying what you're selling, literally and figuratively, as we're here to celebrate your book. But no, I'm so there with you. You know, you mentioned good years and bad years. And what I thought it would be so fun to talk about today is zucchini, because I have had years with my mom's garden. My mom has grown like bumper crops of zucchini that are as big as her leg. And towards the end of the summer, we're like gagging when we see another zucchini, because we're like, if I have another zoodle, like if I, you know, we had the zoodle maker. If I have another bowl of zoodles, I think I'm going to throw up. And I think that is something that a lot of gardeners, and it sounds like when you had just started gardening when you were young and you had all those vegetables and then you were like, wait, what? Zucchinis, I feel like, are one of the massive ones.
Well, they are.
And you can either have insane years or bad years. So you've grown zucchini now how many years? Like, do you have any, before we get into these delicious recipes that you have, do you have some zucchini growing tips or any fun stories from your garden?
So this is probably mostly for my like zone 5B, where I find for me, for any type of vine or squash, anything, whether it's winter or summer squash, always waiting until after kind of that summer solstice. So like late June is when I will not plant any of those seeds and I direct sow them. I find all my zucchini, my pumpkins, my squash, my cucumbers too, direct sowing is always going to have much better. They have tender roots. Transplanting them when I have started them indoors is always going to be a little bit more iffy. Direct sowing them in that kind of heat, by the time we're into mid to late June, they pop up within a couple days, they grow fast, they pick up, it's no problem. Also, if I plant them late like that, like if I could technically plant them in mid-May and be fine, but vine borers for me are so big, and you get past the first generation of vine borers if you kind of wait until late June. So you kind of have a little bit more of a respite to be able to start them later, not have huge issues right away, and then they usually have a much better go, and I've been able to keep it much longer. But honestly, too, I think for me lately, the biggest thing is being okay with when I am done with them or when they have given me so much, I say goodbye. And that's okay. Like I used to think
to the compost heap.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, everyone I know, not everyone, a lot of people I know also either have a garden or have someone that is giving them the extra produce, which is usually zucchini. So while people tell me, like, give it to a food bank, give it to your friends, I do that. And still, I'm like, you can get to a point where it's just like, it's okay. You can say goodbye to it. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But I do usually say, if I wait longer, I have so much better luck with zucchini.
That's fascinating. I love that. I'm going to try that. Are you an eater? Now, this wasn't a recipe in your book, but I'm curious because I'm Italian and this is like a huge part of my culture. Do you ever eat the flowers? Do you ever fry up the flowers?
I do every so often. It kind of depends. It depends like how prolific the flowers are, like how much vegetable I'm getting, because I don't like to pick them off too early, depending. But no, I do. I like to do it. Usually what I do is a little goat cheese with kind of like an herbed goat cheese inside of it and do a little tempura on it is what I like. like, and then do a light, like, you know, fry. I love it. It's not like, it's one of those things that on like a weeknight, it's not usually like the thing I'm probably going to do just because it's a little bit more like elevated or, but no, it's one I love serving that with a salad. Like instead of just taking some goat cheese and maybe breading it and frying it, I love doing it in a squash blossom like that because it just kind of, I don't know. I think it's just one of those summer treats.
Yeah. And are you growing your zucchinis on trellises? Are you letting them crawl on the ground?
Most varieties I've been doing, I do on the ground, which I have lots of space. I will say that. Like I'm blessed with space. So what I have been doing the last couple of years, though, over in my mom's garden is using a new variety or newer to me. I think it's called Escalator. And it is a full vining zucchini. And it doesn't just get it purely is to vine. You train it a little bit. I get it from, I think I find it from like Renee's garden or something. It's like one place has it.
Their seeds are so good.
Right. And I love it. I love that zucchini. It's vining. It does so well. It's on an arbor over two raised beds.
Gorgeous.
And because my zucchini plants get like, you know, massive here, but it stays nice and just stays on that. It's really wonderful. And then they hang down kind of so you can just pick them easily. Because the big thing for me, I don't like big zucchini, which is you always forget that. Always miss one and it will get big.
Yeah.
But if I can, I try to go out every day and just look for smaller ones because I find them just more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay. As I was reading through your book, I was noticing all these zucchini recipes and I was like, great, we're talking.
I had a lot until you told me. And then I looked, I was like, oh, I do have a lot, I guess.
Yeah, there's a bunch of zucchinis in here.
I don't think I do, but yeah, I do.
So before we dive in, your book, it's a cookbook. So we've just nerded out about gardening and I feel like you're as established. Yes, there it is. There's always room at the table. You're, you know, as established of a gardener as a chef, but it's such a homey book and you pay such homage to your family. So before we dive into these recipes for people to use to enjoy their zucchini when they're going to throw up, if they see another zoodle, tell us a little bit about the inspiration from the book.
You know, a lot of this was trying to come from like, I had never obviously written a cookbook before. I've been putting recipes up on my website for, you know, well over 10 years now. But they were kind of always, when you put on a website, you kind of just go by what maybe feels right. I mean, honestly, when I was getting into it, I probably should have had more forethought of how I put recipes up, but it was kind of whatever. With the book, I actually like stopped and thought like what was going to be kind of my focus, which for me was if people have followed me and if not, they know that where I chose to come back after college was such kind of an interesting choice because where most people don't come back to my area of Iowa, they move away somewhere. It was this book kind of shows you why it was important for me and how growing up here kind of like left a thread in me that obviously isn't going to leave anytime soon. And so all the food in the book has elements of something growing up, whether it was my great grandparents, my grandparents, it was something that either I ate growing up or was told about growing up or has some type of story woven through it. So more so than some cookbooks, I will admit mine has like heavy reading on head notes where I kind of describe why is this in here? Because each item has some form of, not like maybe a full story, but it has a reason for being in here. I kind of describe this book as like a love letter, not only to my family, but to everyone else on the idea of what like farm living can be like. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I hate the idea of how much of like a weird like Laura Ingalls I sound like when I describe growing up. But at the same time, when I look back, I'm like, no, it really was like that. It doesn't mean everything was perfect. My goodness, no. But a lot of my childhood was kind of what you would hope it could be. We had outdoor time all the time. We were in the yard, in the garden. We were all together eating every night as a family. And that's what all this food pretty much is. And then I would dial up maybe the flavor now. I would kind of modernize some things, but they all are from that childhood.
It's beautiful. I think so many people are yearning for that homegrown, screen-free connection, whether it's for themselves or for raising the next generation. And it's so tangible. You so feel it reading your book. And also you salivate reading your book. Like this is not a diet book. There are biscuits.
Oh, yeah,
I was looking at those drop biscuits. I was like, those look good.
They're good and they're easy. Too easy almost because you just want to eat, like make them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, this book is, it just looks like comfort food, like just delicious home cooking. Yes. So, all right, Caleb, I've just done such a good job with my zucchinis. I have 400 zucchinis and I need to process them all in the next couple of, you know, weeks, and you can't pickle zucchini. So what's your favorite zucchini recipe in the book that you would want people to try?
So if we want to like cook, and let's say like, we're not talking about baking yet or something like that. If we're talking about purely about cooking, and let's say, so like the most simple one is the garlicky zucchini. And that's to me like a weeknight. If you're just wanting to use up zucchini, it's a quick saute in a skillet. That's going to though really intensify the flavor because it has lots of garlic. It really kind of gets a nice crust on it with browning. Because to me, that's key. Zucchini can either go mushy, which is gross.
Yep.
Or you could actually crispen it, which is then like, oh, you get that flavor, that caramelization, that's going to completely change it. So like, that's my kind of first thing. If I'm on a weeknight, just have a lot of zucchini sitting in my kitchen, I'm going to do that. Number two, though, then I'm going to go to my street corn and zucchini fritters. So we grew up with zucchini fritters probably at least a couple times a week during zucchini season. It was kind of one of those old church cookbook recipes. And it's just a really simple flour kind of batter. An egg, some Parmesan cheese, but then it has lots of shredded zucchini. So most recipes use usually around 2 cups, but shredded zucchini. This one though has the sweet corn in it. So you're kind of balancing and getting, because sometimes the problem is zucchini can kind of be flat in certain things. Like you don't really, like people will stuff it in a chocolate cake and you'll be like, oh, but what's the point? There was no flavor, like enhancement. But like these fritters, I feel like really come out with the flavor, because then you get that kind of that street corn flavor with like a chipotle mayo sauce on top. And so like once they're fried, they just have this like perfect, they're just like that like little bit of bite that you're just like craving, I feel like, in the summer.
Okay, so let's pause. I need to ask a million follow-up questions.
Okay.
So number one, with the crispy garlic zucchini, which is, it's very simple. What's your trick to having it not go mushy and getting it caramelized and delicious?
Okay, there's a couple things. So depending how you're going to do, there's two things I will say. And this is going to answer your question, even though it seems like I'm not. There is another recipe for a zucchini dip. And I think there's these two options on how to do zucchini so it doesn't get mushy. The zucchini dip does one way and the garlicky zucchini does another way. So the way that garlicky zucchini does it is don't crowd the skillet. If you put way too much in, and this is true for anything, you're going to steam it as opposed to brown it. Mm-hmm. So that's anything. Like, think of it like mushrooms too. If you like pile mushrooms in a skillet, they're going to cook down, but they're not going to brown. They're just going to get soft. Same goes for zucchini. Kind of keep it as much as you can in an even layer. And two, don't salt it right away. If you salt something right away, especially that has a lot of water content, like zucchini or mushrooms, it's not going to brown because it's just going to start.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's going to pull out that moisture. So if you right away salt it, it's like macerate. It's going to pretty much macerate it right away. And it's going to cause much more steaming to happen as opposed to browning. So my other way, though, go ahead.
So put it in a hot skillet, not salted, let it start browning.
With some type of fat. Whatever.
Right. Oil or something.
Oil. Yeah.
Let the zucchini start to brown and cook, and then you hit it with salt at the end.
Salt at the end. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Now, what were you going to say with the other one?
So with the dip, though, the other great way to do it is do it in the oven at a high temperature, just like you would roast anything. So I cut it into planks kind of more. Like usually if it's a, you know, like a 4 to 6 inch or kind of that medium sized, I'll cut it in half and then cut it in planks, olive oil. That one you can salt and pepper because it's going in the oven. Uh-huh. And then you put it in the oven at a high temperature and you let it just roast until it gets like brown. And it just is a wonderful way if you, because sometimes that, I'll just eat it like that in the summer. I'll bypass anything else and just eat it from that. That one I do then use in a dip that gets blended in and it's just like you get that browned flavor. That's the, when you can get something to caramelize, whether it's in the oven or in a skillet and it has that crust on it, it's just like the whole like flavor is just changing.
Yes. And I think that is where zucchini is really delicious. When if you, you know, cut it up into the medallions, then you get those brown circles. Yep. Like it's that crunchy part.
Yeah.
I made a pasta sauce the other day where I roasted a bunch of zucchini and then pureed it. And it was really good.
Oh, you made it like the sauce was part, like the zucchini was part of the sauce.
Yeah. So I roasted the zucchini until, and technically I think I over roasted it. And then I roasted a garlic head, put that and a bunch of stuff in a blender and I blended it. And the zucchini ended up being like the cream sauce. It was
wonderful.
For your next book. But
yeah,
anyway.
Really good.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. So, okay, the dip.
Yeah, I love
that
dip.
Because it uses feta. So let's talk about the dip. So the dip you're roasting it, you're salt and peppering it. You're roasting it until it gets that delicious brown caramel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are you doing?
And then it's pretty much, think of it, it's not like a hummus at all because of the texture completely changes in it. But it's blended with some tahini, some Greek mayonnaise, some dill, and some garlic. And it just becomes this, it's not completely smooth like a hummus. That's why I'm saying it's not quite like a hummus. So it has just a little bit of texture, but the flavor is just so forward and different from what you're expecting. And the dill just gives you that like fresh kick at the end. And I think it's such a fun way to use zucchini because you end up thinking it's something completely kind of, it like transforms it in a way, which is just not, usually when you think about it, what most people seem to do with zucchini is they either like to make boats out of it and stuff it, which is fine, but gives a little like, you're just eating cooked
boring
zucchini.
Yeah.
And so this takes it in a way that you're like, I would have never. And it is, to me, like, it is so dippable. You could actually use it as a spread on a sandwich, too, if you wanted to. But I love it as a dip and just like dip, whether it's vegetables, whether it's crackers, whether it's crostini. It just has this like punch of flavor that is so good with the feta.
And talk about another thing in the garden that there's always an excess of is dill. Like I plant dill plant and it just like takes off every year. And I don't eat a lot of dill. So it's like I
you
always
don't?
No, I don't. I don't know why.
I love dill.
Dill always goes to flower. Like it always goes to seed. I never use it enough. Okay. So I'm like,
are you pickling with the flower heads at least?
With the dill flower heads?
Yeah.
I pickle with my I do the chive blossoms, but I don't do the dill blossoms. Wait, tell me more.
I mean, like, well, if you're going to do any type of like dill pickle, use that whole flower head because that's the seeds. That's where the dill seeds are. So right when they're about to dry, you stuff them in a jar of a quick pickles with whatever you're pickling and you're going to get that wonderful dill flavor.
I was so excited to see you had a jardinera recipe.
A quick one. It's like a quick pickle, but yeah.
A quick pickle. But when I was just in Italy, I forgot that that's on every table. Like that's so, so classic. So I'm excited to try that recipe. However, zucchini do not pickle very well, do they?
We don't the best. So when I have tried it. So a quick pickle to me first is best. So you don't want to cook the zucchini.
What's the difference, just for people listening, what's the difference between a quick pickle and a normal pickle?
The main difference is that a normal pickle that you're doing for shelf stable, like let's say like canned goods, they're going to get water bathed or cooked after they're brined. A quick pickle, you pour on a hot brine, but then just put them in the fridge. So they usually always stay much more crisp. It's much more quick. It's fast. And so that's what a lot of people like. And you don't have any, some people just the canning process scares them. So this takes that step completely out and just puts it in the fridge. So it can be a really quick thing you do even every other week or something if you want to.
And how long did you say a quick pickle lasts?
Well, how long does it last? I mean, it lasts much longer than...
As long as you just keep it in the fridge.
I'm trying to think if I've ever had one go bad. I mean, I think technically probably for safety, you'd have to say once you start eating it, probably want to eat it within a few weeks. But my goodness, you know, we do fridge pickles and I do a mustard fridge pickle and I want to say I keep them in the fridge for, I mean, well over a year if I haven't been eating
them.
I mean, like I do multiple jars of them. So this was something my grandma did, but she would always have fridge pickles in the fridge along with all her other pickles. And easily, because it's a high ratio. It's an equal part of vinegar to water. So
you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. So with just going back to the dip, because it sounds almost like an eggplant dip, but you're putting zucchini in instead.
That's a very good way to do it. It is. It would be kind of like a baba ganoush type or mooch
ball. That's kind of what it sounds like. Yeah. But I love it. I love the zucchini and the dill in it and then feta, which makes everything delicious.
I know it really does. It just gives you that like kind of kick of like flavor. And I think, I mean, hello, I love dips. I should say that. Yeah. I love dips. So I think this one using something like you said, zucchini is just something that you can sometimes just have so many sitting there. So if you can have a way to use it that doesn't even feel like the normal way, it just like, you feel like you're winning at life.
Totally. And you can jar it, keep it in your fridge. It'll last for a while, put a little olive oil on top of it. Absolutely. And then you can use it for your sandwich spreads or your, other stuff too.
Yeah.
Because also you can only make so many pickles. Like that's also where we found where I think cucumbers are another one. It's like you either have a billion cucumbers or you have two cucumbers.
Yeah.
And we've definitely had years where it's like, okay, but how many pickles do we like? How many jars of pickles do we need? Okay. I want to go back to these zucchini fritters because these are the things that I'm most excited about trying on your book. So, okay. So you're shredding the zucchini. And then are you draining it?
On those ones, I don't. Okay. So I do now on a few things drain zucchini, but I'm going to be honest, growing up, whenever we used it, I never drained zucchini. And it wasn't, I feel like, till more of a recent, like now it just feels like the trend to always, I think it depends how you're using it and what application. There are certain things where the moisture can be accounted for and it's okay. And there are certain things where maybe it doesn't. In these, no, I don't. And
okay. You're shredding the zucchini.
Yeah.
You're not shredding.
I say this. It's like, I'm like, I should pull up the recipe and make sure I didn't switch it on myself. But anyway, keep going. You're shredding the zucchini. Yeah.
Then you have your sweet corn, either that you're cutting off of your freshly grown corn or out of a can.
You could do it out of a can. You could do frozen. I mean, all those, it works the same in this recipe, exactly the same.
And then I love how you're like, it's a quick, easy batter. I'm like, I've never made a batter before. So you're doing those two things and then flour, eggs. What else goes into that?
Batter before. Don't say you haven't. By the way, I'm looking at the recipe and I am right. I do not see that. There is some onion in it too. The batter, literally, we're talking, you put in some flour, you put in some baking powder and you put in like Parmesan cheese. Like that, like cheese, right there. Yeah, that is, cheese. I know, right? That just helps that like that extra like oomph in it. But that is like, you could also do... If you can find it, I like to use Cotija cheese just because it's that aged.
So good.
Right. But if you can't, Parmesan does work. It has some of the same flavor elements, a little bit different, but it totally works. But anyway, you put that all together. So it kind of becomes this like wet batter that then you just take spoonfuls of and you fry in a skillet or on a flat top, whatever you have. And they just become these perfect little fritters. It's like a little pancake.
And you get the sweet corn and the savory cheese.
So you get
and
like
the moist awesome zucchini
little, like, corn in there. And then a chipotle mayonnaise, which I think is essential on it.
How do you make that?
Well, you can do two ways. I make mayonnaise just because I'm like, why wouldn't you? But you can also just do it where you take mayonnaise, just a certain amount, like a cup of mayonnaise, and you add in some chipotle powder. Actually, in this case, I think that's the easiest way. And then some oregano, some garlic, and a little bit of lime juice. And you mix it all together. And it's just kind of like this little crema almost on top of it, which is
yum. Do you grow your own garlic?
I do. I love garlic. I usually grow around 80 to 90 heads of it, I think, a year.
Hard or soft?
Both. I do. Okay, funny. I love talking to a garden person. I usually do a mixture. Mostly hard, but lately I've been doing more soft to try to play around with winter storage because the hard doesn't keep as long.
Okay. And from a chef's perspective, do you prefer one or the other?
I think hard garlic can be a slightly, one, it always gives you bigger cloves.
Right.
So that's, for some people, that's good or bad. I personally like it because I'm always going to add extra garlic to something. Yeah. And it's just like a bigger, nicer one to chop up. I do think hard can have a little bit more of like a forward flavor, which again, I love garlic, so I'm going to like that. Soft can have a little bit, to me, I hate to say it like that, but a little bit softer flavor. Mm-hmm. And so for what most recipes that you're going to use it in, you're not going to notice a huge difference. Like, and I'm not going to do like a raw taste test by any means. So
yeah.
Do those two things, which by the way, lately I've been fermenting garlic and honey. That is wonderful.
How are you using it?
So technically, it's a medicinal thing for some people. And I will like try to take a spoonful of the honey if I feel like I have a sore throat. Maybe it helps. I'm not sure. But I love to use the honey in any salad dressing or drizzled on top of like something like a pizza or something, just because you get that garlicky honey. Mm-hmm. And you can use the garlic. Again, some people take it as like a health thing. I love to chop it up and use it in my dressings again or whatever, just because it gives you that like weird, like sweet, pungent garlic thing. It's just it's a beautiful thing.
It's just honey and garlic.
It's just honey and garlic. And it makes the honey, like at first it feels way too thick. And then after like a week or two, it just starts to get really like runny and like perfect. And it just, yeah, it's good.
So good. I took a horticultural therapy class once and our teacher was this like German elder woman one of our like projects we did in class was red onion, garlic, and honey.
Wait, a lot of people have been telling me about red onion. I haven't ever done
red onion. Yeah. So, and it's still like so delicious.
Was that for medicinal purposes, the red onion part?
Yeah. You take a spoonful of it when you're feeling sick.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. But like, honestly, delicious. And for salad dressings, absolutely.
Right.
So freaking good. Okay. You had one other recipe I want to ask you about because I love a zucchini bread and you have a zucchini loaf cake.
Yeah, I do.
Tell me more. So we can have zucchini for dessert.
I know, right? Which, okay. So again, I grew up with a chocolate cake that had zucchini in it all the time. And I really like it. It's a spiced cake. It had like cinnamon and clove and cocoa and zucchini. But this is kind of like, it's not a take on that at all, but it's the idea of a sweet, obviously baked good with zucchini, but it encompasses more of this like orange cardamom zucchini, beautiful like loaf cake that to me, there's something about, I think what's fun about zucchini is that it can take on any flavor, really. It doesn't have a forward enough flavor on its own that it's not gonna really compete with anything. So I kind of like the idea that you can pick apart different things. So like cardamom to me is underused. I love cardamom and I love it, especially in a baked good where we're expecting usually cinnamon to kind of throw the cardamom in for just a much more kind of unique kind of flavor that we're maybe not used to, especially in the States, I should say. And then orange and cardamom work so well together that the zucchini kind of is just like transformed again into something completely different. And I will always say, I don't like to peel my zucchini because I want people to see it's in there. I'm not trying to like hide. I hate when people are like, oh, you don't know what's in there, do you? And I'm like, no, I want people to know the zucchini. It's the fun part. Like it adds a ton of moisture to a cake. So you're going to have this beautiful, moist cake that is just, yeah, like you said, it's for dessert, but you could have it for breakfast too. And just
have for breakfast too, like grilled with some salty butter.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that. I love that idea.
I'm such a sweet and salty person. If you haven't figured, I'm like, oh my God, I want it both.
That'd be absolutely wonderful. I quick turned that recipe so I could, and then I sprinkle like a good turbinado sugar over the top. So it gets kind of like a crust on top when you bake it. That is, I'm excited for zucchini season. I kind of wasn't like there, but now I'm like, yeah, I'm ready for it.
We're ready. You're such a delight. I'm so happy for you with this book. It's so great. Where can everyone find it? Everybody needs to, because in addition to zucchini, guys, there's 60 other recipes in this book. Like this was
a total of 94, I think.
94
recipes. Yeah.
And they're unique. There's no like basic pancake recipe. Like everything has a cool riff, you know? So
good. I'm glad you feel that.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have like a most cherished recipe that you're sharing with everyone in the book?
The one that I just ended up loving the best and I was really proud of is a roasted strawberry and rhubarb pie. I grew up, strawberry rhubarb pie is my absolute favorite. Like I love.
Really?
I love rhubarb. I'm obsessed with rhubarb, which in the Midwest, if you have a farm, you're most likely going to have an old patch of rhubarb. So we just always had it. But this like roasts the rhubarb and strawberry low and slow in the oven for a long time. And it becomes like this jam. And then you just pour that into a pre-baked crust. And so you get this dense, rich, flavored layer of strawberry rhubarb that to me, just like it knocks any other form of strawberry rhubarb pie out of the water because it's just pretty much like all fruit in this wonderful layer and none of that like gelatinous-y, like sometimes a fruit pie can be kind of like, you know, this is just like, I love the method on that recipe and I just love how it, I just really love that recipe.
I love that. Well, everybody has to go get the book so they can get that recipe. So where can everyone find you? And because people should follow you for your gardening, like aesthetic and tips as much as your food, you know, tips. But where can everyone follow you and where can everyone find the book?
So I am Wise Guide on all forms. Every social platform and my website is Wise Guide. WYSEGUIDE. So it's a play on my last name. My last name is Wise with a Y. So WYSEGUIDE for my website and socials. And then the book is everywhere books are sold. Online, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. On my website, you can go to a page that will also give you like different, like if you want like a local bookseller, like different options, there's a page there that will kind of give you all those too.
Amazing. Welcome to the Authors Club. And yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Joy. All right. Thank you, Caleb. I want to have Caleb back for like an episode on every single garden harvest, like plant, like every classic plant. And then what we could cook. Like I want to do an episode on tomatoes with him and an episode on corn with him and all sorts of stuff. He's so great. Check him out at Wise Guide. Across all channels. And then also grab his book. It's beautifully shot. The recipes are amazing. He gave you a kind of glimpse to his zucchini ones, but he has tons and tons of more recipes. He's such a sweetheart. I can't wait for the next time we chat. Let me know which of these recipes you cook. Tag me on social media with the results. And as per usual, plant friends, I hope that you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle.
This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, Plant Friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.